is under advisement. Our final case for argument this morning is United States against Johnson. Mr. Maximovich.
Yes. May it please the court, I'm attorney John Maximovich, and I'm representing the appellant, Mr. Donnie Johnson. Mr. Johnson was convicted of being a felon in possession of a firearm, and he was sentenced to 275 months pursuant to the Armed Career Criminal Act. On August 6th of 2001, the Gary police stopped Mr. Johnson as he was driving his van in Gary, Indiana. Mr. Johnson was removed from the van was searched, and the Gary police officer found a rather dilapidated .22 caliber revolver in the back of Mr. Johnson's van under a rear seat on the driver's side of the van. The gun belonged to a lady friend of Mr. Johnson who has the same surname, however, they're not married. Her name was Mary Johnson. The police officer testified that he did not see at any point in time Mr. Johnson handling or touching or holding the gun. The party stipulated that there was no fingerprints upon the gun. Mary Johnson herself testified that she never allowed anybody to use this pistol, or revolver. She testified that Mr. Johnson had asked her several times to use the gun. She never allowed him to use the gun. It's significant that Mary Johnson could not testify, and nobody, as a matter of fact, was able to testify that Mr. Johnson ever took this gun out of Mary Johnson's house. He was never seen taking it out of the house. And in point of fact, he was never seen with the gun. Whether or not Mr. Johnson knew this gun was in his van became extremely important as far as the government proving all the elements that they needed to prove to convict him of being a felon in possession. 77 days after this incident, Mr. Johnson was driving a van in Scottsboro, Alabama, and he got stopped, searched, and in Alabama they found a .38 caliber pistol, once again belonging to Mary Johnson, in the van. At trial, over Mr. Johnson's objection, the district court allowed the government to introduce this subsequent possession evidence, this Alabama possession evidence, on the questions of knowledge or absence of mistake or accident. What happened here, the government had an extremely weak evidentiary case against Mr. Johnson. Their best evidence came from Mary Johnson's son, Ishmael Garrett, who testified that in May of 2001, which would be about 3 months prior to this incident, he saw Donnie Johnson holding a gun that looked similar to this gun that was discovered in Mr. Johnson's van.
Who was holding the gun?
Donnie Johnson, the defendant in this case. He was holding the gun in the same van.
You mentioned earlier about a dilapidated gun.
Yes.
A different gun?
No. According to the testimony presented by Ishmael Garrett, this gun closely resembled the gun that was admitted at trial against Mr. Johnson.
The first one they found. What about the one in Alabama? Is that a different one?
Entirely different gun. It was a 38 caliber pistol. But
I take it that your client wasn't initially charged upon the arrest for this crime?
No, Your Honor, he wasn't. He was charged subsequent to the Alabama incident.
So he was arrested and he bailed out and charges weren't issued for several months until after the second arrest, or what was the deal?
I'm assuming he bailed out. I didn't represent him at that point in time. I really don't know, but I'm assuming it was just handled in a way that allowed him to bail himself out.
At that point, then, it's likely the police had the first gun.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yes, okay. They did have the first gun. However, a point I'd like to make, because I feel it is important, Ishmael was facing felony theft charges, utility fraud charges, and also animal neglect charges at the time that he was presenting his testimony in this case. And he certainly did not make an ideal witness, and what it does is it weakens the government's case down below, and it shows the significance of allowing this propensity evidence in. Also, Mary Johnson, for the short 3-month period of time she was in Alabama with Donnie Johnson, she accumulated 5 check deception charges. So both her and her son, which are basically the two best witnesses the government could produce, both had offenses of dishonesty and deceit holding over their heads. They were not that credible. If this evidence was not allowed into the case, there's an extremely likely result that he may have been acquitted. However, the court let it in. In my opinion, I have a difficult time seeing how that evidence was anything other than propensity evidence.
Well, it'd be propensity for her seeming to leave a gun in his car.
She was moving, and she testified that she used his van the day before to move her dresser drawer and items to a new location. It was Mr. Johnson's theory that in the move, somehow this gun fell out of the drawer, and that's what explained its presence in the van. There was Mary Johnson was inconsistent as to the exact day that she put her dresser drawers into his van to move them. She testified she started moving in May of 2001, and on August 5th of 2001, she was still moving.
This is when she's moving out of his place, right?
Her place. It's her place. They live together on and off. And they even lived together with about three other people. It was an on-and-off type of relationship. At the time of this incident, Mr. Johnson was not living with her. He was living with his mother. And the day before, she used his van to move. And he believes that gun somehow fell out during the move and somehow nestled itself. This was an old van. Nestled itself somehow under a towel under the rear seat. Without that Alabama possession evidence in the case, it would have been significantly weaker. And I see my time is out here.
You still have a minute for rebuttal.
It would have been significantly weaker. I think that he suffered prejudice by having that evidence admitted against him. And we'd ask the court to send it back to the district court, vacate the judgment, and give him a new trial.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Jacobs.
May it please the court, Jacqueline Jacobs on behalf of the government. The district court considered this subsequent firearm possession evidence in light of this court's four-prong test, and only the first and the fourth prong of that test were contested. So those are the issues that I'll address with the court this morning. First of all, as to the facts that were discussed this morning, the government also presented evidence that when Mr. Johnson was stopped in that van, the officer who stopped him also testified that when during the time that he was processing this traffic stop that then turned into an arrest, he also noticed that at a time he walked away from Mr. Johnson's van, he noticed Mr. Johnson out of the driver's seat. He noticed some movement. He could see the van moving and noticed some movement toward the back or the middle portion of the van. So since he was the owner of that van and the sole occupant, the government charged this on a basis of actual and or constructive possession of that firearm. What the government was then able to argue is that he had the gun in his possession or he had it near him and near the driver's seat, and when the officer turned his back and moved away, Mr. Johnson was able to scurry to the back of the van and hide it, where it was then found secreted under a cloth. So the subsequent firearm evidence then turned into evidence of his knowledge, whether or not he knew that gun was in his van or whether it was, as he said in his second version of events, which is what he put forth as a theory to the jury, which he asked for and got an instruction on this theory. And his theory was that he did not know that gun was in the van and that it was either there because Mary intentionally put it there, or she accidentally or mistakenly left the gun there when she used the van to move. So what the government then was able to argue was that the same circumstances happened in Alabama as happened in Indiana, and that is that he was carrying a gun that belonged to his girlfriend Mary, that when he stopped by the police, he knows he shouldn't have the gun. He tells the police the gun belongs to Mary. So the government used this evidence to show that, indeed, he did have knowledge that the gun was in the van, and this is sort of a pattern with him. It wasn't, as Mr. Johnson said, that it was in there mistakenly or left there accidentally by Mary or anyone else who helped her move. The evidence was also strong on the behalf of the government because aside from the theory he put forth at trial, he also gave a statement to the police that was admitted as evidence through the police detective's testimony at trial, and that is when he was first arrested, he said, well, didn't know that gun was in there, never saw it until the police showed it to me. It belongs, after having a phone conversation with my girlfriend Mary, it belongs to her. This is a gun that she found, and she put in the van to somehow take it to the police department and return it. That was his first version of events, and that was put to the jury. Then his second version was as I described. So they already knew that he gave conflicting stories, and then they heard testimony from Mary that not only had she not put the gun there intentionally, she had not left it there when she moved, because she testified that she did borrow the van to move, although she wasn't sure when this date actually was, but it could have been the day before he was arrested, she said. But she said that she moved some 8 blocks when she got to the destination. Nothing was in disarray. Everything was as she had found it or as she had put it in, and that everything that she put in was then taken out of the van. There was then additional testimony put before the jury that Mr. Johnson was extremely fastidious with his van, and both Mary and Mary's son and even the defendant's own cousin testified that, yes, he was pretty much of a neat freak, and the argument the government then was able to make is if this gun was left in there under a cloth or in any other way, he would have known that that gun was in there and not had the police have to find it. So what the government says today to your honors is that This was highly probative evidence. This subsequent firearm possession was highly probative evidence to show that, indeed, he did know that gun was in his van. It wasn't there by any kind of happenstance or accident. And this was very probative evidence, and that probative value was not outweighed by the danger of unfair prejudice, because that the danger of any prejudice was reduced by two factors. One, that the government chose to take out the most egregious facts from this Alabama incident, which was, in Alabama, the defendant was not stopped just at a traffic stop and happened to have the gun in the car. Indeed, there was a chase. There were some shots fired, and this gun was again found after the defendant jumped out of the van and was caught. The gun was found then by the driver's seat. So that's how the government was able to argue that in both instances he had the van, and in the Indiana instance he scurried to the back of the van and hid that gun. But aside from the government reducing any prejudicial effect of this evidence, the court then gave a limiting instruction, instructing the jury that they should use this evidence only to show that, or only to go toward knowledge, absence of mistake, or accident. So since the evidence was highly probative, since any danger of unfair prejudice was reduced through the government's cautious admission of that evidence or cautious use of that evidence, and the court, through its limiting instruction, further reduced any danger of unfair prejudice, the district court did not err by admitting the evidence. And if there are no further questions,
Where was Ishmael when he testified about the gun? Well, I mean, not when he testified, but where did he see the gun?
He saw it, Your Honor, those few months before the arrest in Indiana. He saw it while the defendant was driving the same van. The defendant reached down under the driver's seat, pulled it out, and it looked like Mary's gun, but the dilapidated state that was discussed before is the fact that there was black electrical tape wrapped around the grip of the gun. And Mary also testified that when she last saw the gun in her apartment, where the defendant knew it was and where he had access to it, it did not have the black tape. So that was additional evidence that he had taken it without Mary's knowledge and knew that was in the van. And if there are no further questions, the government would respectfully ask this court to affirm the lower court's decision. Thank you.
Anything further, counsel? You must have about 20 seconds. Not obligatory to use this.
Very, very, very briefly, there's nothing in the record, no evidence that says that the defendant scurried to the back of the van to hide the gun. That's not the fact.
Well, the van is rocking and rolling, right?
Yes. The officer said it's rocking and rolling. There's testimony that
we can infer scurrying.
Well, yes, but not to the back of the van.
Or the presence of very big mice.
Yeah, very big mice. But he was toward the middle of the van. The gun was found toward the back in the rear seat, and the defendant very well could have been doing something other than hiding a gun in the van. You know, I know what he told me he was doing. However, it's not in the record. I'm not going to state it here. But yes. He wasn't hiding a gun in the van.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And we appreciate your willingness to take the appointment and assist both your client and the court. The case is taken under advisement. The court will be in recess.